Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Before the age of 30, Michael Fetchner Sr. was well on his way to becoming a Dallas millionaire. Then, a chance encounter changed the course of his life. White, privileged, and proud, Mike met a woman in 1989 who was black, poor, and humble. Her name was Velma Mitchell. She had 15 cents to her name, but had everything Mike wanted in life: respect, inner peace, and great hope. Meeting Velma changed the trajectory of Mike's life for eternity. Through the course of life-changing actions, he went from purchasing mink coats and extravagant vacations to pouring everything he had into an urban renewal ministry in inner-city Dallas. But as Mike began serving the poor full-time, ministering not only with his mouth but with his heart and deeds, something improbable happened. He looked at his wife, felt a pain in his stomach, and said, "This kind of keeps hurting." Mike was diagnosed with terminal cancer and given 8 months to 18 months to live on July 1st, 2009. He was 48 years old. Fetchner's son, Michael Fetchner Jr., rose up to tell his father's story in Lessons on the Way to Heaven, What My Father Taught Me. And even though Mike faced dark days ahead, he was convinced that great trial actually brings great opportunity. And he lived life and ministry to the fullest until the very end. He invested more time with the ministry he founded, called His Bridge Builders, based in a neighborhood called Bon-Ton, south of downtown Dallas, a hotbed of poverty, drugs, crime, and hopelessness. And it's this incredible story of transformation and hope that we feature today on the road, as Michael Fetchner Jr. kindly joins us. A great day to you, Michael. It's a real pleasure to have you here, sir.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a joy to get to share about my father's story.
Oh, such a special story it is. As we begin, I mean, you're a pretty busy man to begin with, sir. An entrepreneur, a law student, and a family man. Why was it so important to you to also add author to that biography and to tell your dad's story?
Well, it was one of the things that he had always dreamed about, and it was something that I got the chance to work with him on in the last few months of his life. And as he started to get close to the end of his life, he asked me to take on a larger role with the project, and ultimately it became the liaison between him and a publisher. And at that point, he actually got really sick and kind of put the project on hold. But I got a phone call on the day of his funeral that was the publisher saying that we got a contract on the book. Obviously, they had not known that he had passed in the days preceding. And it was one of those surreal moments where I knew he would have been so happy and so excited. But also a sad moment that he was no longer here to tell the story. So I felt compelled to rise up and to tell that story for him.
And it's a pretty heartwarming tale at that. Although there is the pain of loss, there's so much hope in this story. And as we dig into that story, Michael, I mean, you talk about how your dad, like many of us really, prayed the prayer to receive Jesus at a young age, but then he didn't grow spiritually until much later in his life. How do you think that Christian parents can help in countering that recurring trend?
Sure. I think that's something that we see a lot in the church today, and something that I think youth ministers and parents alike are trying to figure out. And I can say for our family, for me and my brothers and sister, one of the greatest things in helping us develop our faith and maturing us in our faith was serving others. And my father would take us with him on the weekends and in the evenings to go serve others that were less fortunate. And it caused us to have an earlier realization of whether or not I really believe in God and if I really want to follow God. And it brings you to a point where Christianity, you understand that Christianity is not about just your eternal salvation after you die. It's about how you live your life here and now.
Right. Right. Well, talk to us a little bit about the person that your dad was before he met your mom. Paint the picture of his business rise and his early successes, if you could.
Sure. He tells a story a lot about when he was in college, he had one goal, and that was to make money. And he was going to college to get a business degree. And while he was there, he worked for a company, and he was doing sales. And it was a multi-marketing company. And so everybody he met, he just saw them as an opportunity for him to make more money.
Sure.
And so he would sign everybody up that he could. He'd give them their best pitch. He would take them out to lunch and tell them how much money they could make. But in reality, all he cared about was how much he could make. And that was kind of his agenda early in his life. And before he met my mom, he really had never considered the deeper spiritual truths. And she really helped kind of bring some grounding that was much needed. It didn't take hold immediately, but over time it started to have a large effect and kind of grounding him and bringing him to the realization that life isn't about him and it's not just about making money either.
Right. That's the voice of Mr. Michael Fetchner Jr., author of Lessons on the Way to Heaven. Just an incredible story. And we do want to mention, too, that due to the generosity of Michael and his publisher, we have two copies of the book to give away today. You can enter to win by sending us a note via the form that you'll find at myfaithradio.com when you look for On the Road under Programs. And you express that it wasn't a one-moment change when it came to your mom's influence in your dad's life. But it's clear in the book that the relationship that he had with her changed the whole trajectory of his life. Can you speak to that? I mean, it's a big concept, but God really used your mom in the life of your dad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that without my mom, my dad would have probably gone down a path of more destruction and more selfishness than he went down. And throughout their 20s, they got married when they were in their early 20s. And throughout their 20s, she would kind of keep him in check, keep him in line, continue encouraging him to serve and to be a part of the church when that maybe wouldn't have been his top priority. And so as my mom continued to pray for him and continued to just encourage him to seek God, she saw those prayers become answered. And it was funny, she says that she asked God to change my dad's heart and to give him a heart to serve. And in her mind, she thought that meant serving in the parking lot on Sunday morning, much less selling their business and serving the poor full time.
Is an illustration of how stark of a difference that life change made. You tell this touching story of your dad in the same room as the President of the United States taking a phone call from a recovering drug dealer. How was he able to have such an equal view of everyone?
I think he never really became enamored by a title or a position. And so to him, people were just people, and he didn't try to position himself after he came back to the Lord. He didn't try to position himself as someone who hung out with influencers or powerful people. He just sought people to love and to serve and to pray for. And so whether or not that was a president or someone in the White House or a drug dealer on the streets in Bon-Ton, it didn't make any difference to him. To him, you were still God's creation, and he was going to love you and care for you like anyone else.
And you mentioned Bon-Ton, which at the time was a hotbed of poverty and drugs and crime and hopelessness, known to be the most dangerous area around Dallas. I mean, did your dad, when he began his ministry there to the people of Bon-Ton, did he ever seem nervous or afraid? I mean, after all, he was putting himself in a place where he obviously stood out.
You know, I don't ever remember him being afraid. And I think that's because he just he got along with people so well that he made friends so quickly. And so he was never really in Bon-Ton by himself. He was always surrounded by friends, mostly new friends. And so it wasn't it didn't feel to him like he was an outsider coming in. It felt to him like he was in a community with his friends, and they were just doing life together.
We're here with Michael Fetzner Jr. today, author of Lessons on the Way to Heaven, telling the incredible story of his dad here on the road for Faith Radio. And I'm Ryan Thomas. When we talk about the day in the life of your dad's ministry to Bon-Ton, what were some of the biggest parts of that? What kind of things did he do? And just talk a little bit about his heart for change there.
Absolutely. He was a people person, and he would always emphasize that so often we try to look at processes or programs, and we try to implement something that is going to get a lot of people involved, but not going to be very transformational. And he was focused on transforming people. And so every day he would spend time one-on-one with individuals, whether it was a North Dallas millionaire that needed encouragement and discipling, and whether or not it was a South Dallas poor man who needed love and encouragement to help get his life back on track too. And so he spent every day with at least one or two people one-on-one, just encouraging, discipling, and loving on them. The other thing he did was he was always on the phone with people. And I don't ever remember him not answering a phone call. And it just kind of spoke to his heart to meet people's needs. And a lot of times people would call him when they were in distress or having a bad day and needed counseling. And so he was just always available. You know, to me, that's taxing and draining. Cause I'm not that kind of person, but to him, he just woke up every day and loved that kind of stuff. So, those were two things that were hallmarks of his life. Prayer was absolutely essential. He would, speaking of those phone calls that he would make, he would spend the morning in prayer for probably 30 minutes from about 7 a.m. to 7:30. And after he was done praying, he would just call someone. Whoever he felt like the Lord was leading him to call, he'd pick up his phone and call him. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people come up to me and tell me, I was having a terrible morning and your dad called me, and it was the perfect time, it was the perfect conversation to get me exactly where I needed to be. And my dad would say, it's because I was praying and the Lord laid you on my heart. And so people, prayer, and availability were kind of the hallmarks of his day.
We have heard so much, I think, in recent years, and it's a blessing that we have, about the things that we as people of faith can do to reach out to others. But from your unique perspective, both watching your dad and how you've been involved yourself with your family, what do you think the church can do that the government perhaps cannot do when it comes to alleviating poverty and reaching out in this way?
Well, I think that the church is uniquely positioned to provide not just material hope, but obviously eternal hope. And so whenever someone is down and out, you have to give them more than just a meal. You have to give them more than just a way to survive today. You've got to give them a hope. And through Christ, we can provide that. And beyond that, we have the heart to love people like the government can do. And I think that so much of what is needed in these impoverished neighborhoods is simply someone that cares, someone that says, I'm going to walk alongside you, I'm going to love you, I'm going to teach you, and we're going to make it through together.
From what you've seen, do you have hope that the cycle of poverty can be broken? Is it something that we can win, a battle that we can win?
Absolutely. I mean, I have no doubt that poverty is an issue that it's hard, and there are challenges, absolutely, because we have to understand that a lot of this is generational. It's not just someone falling down on hard times. At this point, we're dealing with generations of a cultural mindset that have been so deeply ingrained. And while that's hard to overcome, the more that we are joining them and walking alongside them, we're able to bring about change in the way they think. One of my favorite stories is whenever I had a young man who just got out of prison and was on parole, and we got him a job, and he was doing great, and he was saving up money to make his car payment, which was a couple hundred dollars. And he said, you know, I really need to have my car so I can get to work every day. Otherwise, it takes way too long to get to work on the buses. And so I said, okay, well, let's get a car. So we got a car, and he was saving, you know, to make all the payments. And he came home one day to find that someone had stolen his car payment money. And so in his mind, he's about to lose it. And he calls me and says, hey, look, somebody took my car money. I've got to go get some money from someone. I said, well, what are you going to go do? He said, I'm going to go steal it from someone else. I said, okay, hold on. Let's rethink that. You're on parole. If you get caught, what happens? Well, I'm going to go to jail for 20 years. Well, maybe we shouldn't do that then. Let's bring in some other solutions here. And so it's just being around and being available to help walk through some things that may seem fundamental to you and I. But for so many of these men and women now, when they were kids, they didn't have the opportunities to develop and to grow like we did because of the generational poverty that they grew up in.
That is the voice of Mr. Michael Fetzner Jr. He's written the book Lessons on the Way to Heaven, an amazing story about his dad. And we do have two copies of the book to give away today. You can enter to win in the drawing if you visit myfaithradio.com, look for On the Road under Programs, and just fill out that quick form right there. And Michael, something that's really striking in the book, when your dad found out that he had lung cancer, he decided that your family would go to the Cheesecake Factory to celebrate life. Was that the reaction that you expected from him?
No, it wasn't. I should have, but it wasn't. You know, I was coming home from college, and my dad called me and said that the doctor called him and told him, and that whenever I got to the house, he was going to sit the family down and tell everyone. And so when I got there, I'd already kind of known, and he shared the news with the whole family, and everybody was crying, and he said, okay, well, tonight we're going to go out to Cheesecake Factory. And I think we all just kind of looked at each other like, what? You know, just like a last wish kind of thing, like I want to go eat Cheesecake Factory, but it wasn't. It was him saying, look, we're not going to let this get us down. We're not going to let it knock us to our knees. We're going to fight, and we're going to celebrate life, and we're going to go for it. And the next morning, this is, I think, even funnier, the next morning I woke up, and it was a Saturday morning, and it was summer, and walked out to the kitchen nook area, and I look outside, and my dad is in the pool on the inflatable, you know, with a drink in his hand, his cell phone in his other hand, talking to people, laughing, just enjoying the day. Mm. And I'm thinking, you just got diagnosed with cancer, and here you are just completely trusting God. And it was just an incredible thing to see how he handled that entire situation.
What was the timeline like between when he discovered that he had the cancer and how long the rest of his life was? And inside of that, Michael, I mean, I'm sure it's a big question, but how much did you learn about the way to truly live from watching the way that your dad approached the end of his life?
Yeah, well, whenever he first got the diagnosis, they told him 8 months. And that was extended to almost 5 years.
Wow.
And so he was given about 4 years of borrowed time, as they say. And he used that time to do so much. It was incredible. It almost felt like he was just going 200 miles per hour the whole time during those four and a half, 5 years. And, you know, he had to go do treatments in Germany, down in Houston, out in California. And what was amazing was everywhere that he went, he used it as an opportunity to do ministry. And whether it was going to Watts in Los Angeles, California, or starting Chemo Church down in Houston, he would take these trips of medical treatment and turn them into opportunities to say, hey, I'm going through a hard time, but I still trust that God loves me, and I want to share God's love with others.
Now, your dad was incredibly bold in approaching gang members, drug dealers, and more. How was he able to go into these potentially sticky situations with such confidence?
Well, towards the end of his life, when he had cancer, he would always joke that he was dying anyway, so what could they do to him? But he was like that before he had cancer, and it really was just a boldness of the Lord. You know, I think about some of those great biblical characters and the boldness that they have. I think of David and the boldness that he had to go stand up to Goliath. And, you know, I think that the Lord, whenever he's going to use us, he'll give us the boldness that is required, the strength that is required. And he would just trust the Lord that this is where he was supposed to be, and these are the people that he is supposed to talk to, and he would go for it. And what was amazing is I think a lot of times we, because we don't know, we think the worst. We presume the worst of people. And, you know, it's interesting. The more you get to know people that are different than you, the more you realize that they're alike you. You know, I'll walk into a community like that and feel no fear, but almost feel at home. Because I know the people there, I know their hearts, I know their struggles, and I know that, that they love me like I love them. And so that hesitancy, I think it's not out of a fear that should really be there. It's just something new. And so once you kind of get through that and you see that, hey, these people are different, but they have a lot of the same goals and same dreams and same heart that I have, and we just have never known each other. So he just became more and more comfortable and familiar, and eventually, you know, he felt as home in the hood as he did in his North Dallas neighborhood.
That's a great word from Michael Fetchner Jr. The book is called Lessons on the Way to Heaven, and it's been such a pleasure, Mike, talking with you today and hearing this just tremendous story. Want to mention again, we do have two copies of the book to give away. If you've been listening and are just enamored by this story and by this legacy, you can enter to win by sending us a note via the form that you'll find at myfaithradio.com when you find On the Road under Programs. And I know the book is available everywhere, Michael, but maybe just a couple places where people could go if they don't have a chance to win the book today, whether it's Amazon or stores everywhere, I'm sure.
Yeah. All your major Christian bookstores should have copies, and obviously Amazon is always stocked and ready to ship as well.
That's tremendous. Well, we just have about 90 seconds left, and I wonder, as we close out, I mean, your dad's story is just chock full of the amazing power of transformation that someone can experience when they really follow Christ. And maybe there's somebody listening today that's in a similar situation to what you describe your dad being. Maybe they did pray a prayer when they were kids, but really right now they're either complacent or they're in a place where they're not sure if they can really change. What does the story of your dad show you about that possibility, sir?
Well, I think that the greatest lesson is that, one, life is about so much more than just getting what I can get out of God. It's about how can I serve God. And I think a lot of times the church today can be so focused on preaching personal salvation but not sanctification or service. And the challenge that I would give is to say that, you know, this is our chance. Serving the world, serving the lost and the least and the poor is, I believe, the church's greatest opportunity to proclaim the goodness and the grace of Christ. And that by surrendering your own comforts and your own desires and following hard after Christ, you open up the opportunity for so many others to experience the goodness and the love of God that He has commissioned us to share with the world. And so don't hold back. Don't worry about all the details. Trust that God is a sovereign God and that He is in control, and go for it.
Michael Fetzner Jr., thank you so much, sir, for sharing this incredible story and for spending time today with us here on the road.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.